Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's episode is about handling the divorce conversation. There are three reactions to being told by your spouse that you're going to be getting a divorce. The first one is total acceptance. The second one is complete denial. And the third are threats and anger. So we in the divorce profession, mediators, attorneys, therapists, we're all told not to share our personal lives with our clients. And I understand why. Our jobs are to service our clients. Their lives and their stories are front and center. But I think a little differently. I think that by sharing my personal story, it connects me to my clients. It shows them that A, there's certainly life after divorce. B, I'm kind of in the right pocket. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do regarding amicable divorces, because mine was very amicable. But I do want to share with you how I was told and what my reaction was, because I'm the one that falls into the category of total acceptance. But I just want to finish with, when I have clients in the office, and I'm a divorce mediator, as you all know, and what is called a legal document assistant, it's a paralegal on steroids. It means that without an attorney overseeing me, I can file for divorces. I can file for both people in an amicable divorce setting, or I can just do the filing for one of the two spouses. But when I start telling my divorce story about how I was approached and what my reaction was and the emotions that followed it, it really creates a different type of atmosphere when I work with my clients. So I want to start with me first. This is my divorce story. And I am, again, the total acceptance category. Well, I knew my marriage needed help. I knew that we should talk about it and really address the things that were going on in our marriage, but we didn't. We really just were little ducks out of water in serious relationship issues, and that was really a very serious relationship issue. I met my ex-husband, by the way, in front of the hot dog stand on the midway of the circus. Now, I started my career in live entertainment. I joined the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus as a marketing director. The first day on the show, 1980, dark ages, I was in Youngstown, Ohio. That was the first day I hooked up with the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus. It was intermission. I was just walking around the grounds, getting to know the show. It was an outdoor tented show. And I stopped in my tracks. I saw my soon-to-be husband standing in front of the hot dog stand on the midway eating a hot dog. He was in the circus band. He was what we call a euphonium player. It was a small tuba. And it was just a knowing of the soul. When I looked at him, it wasn't a physical reaction. A lot of times we get that. But it was, the only way I can say it is a knowing of the soul. I just felt that we had been connected somehow, some way in the past. And I asked him where he went to school, where he grew up, and no, none of that. Anyway, we went into, over the next few years, a courtship. I was still a marketing director. He was now the band leader. We got to know each other by playing music after the show. I'm also a musician, so I brought my flute on the road with me. And we played music after the show. That's how we developed our relationship. And I think it went into a lovely courtship of him writing poetry to me, sending me flowers. I lived in hotels on the road. He lived in one of the boxcars turned into sleeper units, bunk beds. That's how you lived, the band and the clowns and the roustabouts. It was such a romantic time. I love that time in my life more than you can possibly know. Anyway, we eventually got married. We stayed on the show for a little bit, and then we joined civilian life and got jobs. Because we didn't live together before we got married, I think that made a difference. But regardless, it doesn't matter. We're married, and now we're having problems. But we never talked about it. So he joined another circus. I was fine with that. A little bit of distance I thought would be good. But what I did not anticipate was, of course, another relationship developing on his part. I drove to the West Coast, where I live now, Los Angeles, started working here. My brother lived here, so I joined him in his company. It was a company that produced live entertainment for private events. I did very well. I actually loved doing that for a living. I did fly out to see my husband. That first year I went to California, and I thought we should really have the talk. I was ready to have the talk about what we can do to improve our relationship. What I wasn't expecting was the request for a divorce. We were in a restaurant in downtown Chicago where we used to live, and when I heard the words, "I would like a divorce," the room started spinning. I thought I was going to pass out, and I ran to the restroom just to compose myself and to catch my breath. When I went back, I couldn't speak. I literally couldn't speak. I didn't know what to say or do, but accept. Okay, well, if this is what you want, then this is what we'll do. My whole feeling was, I will never, ever, ever force anybody to be with me who doesn't want to be with me. He did tell me he was having an affair with the woman who trained the baboons. I'm sorry, this is just too funny. As I'm telling you this very important emotional story, the elements to it are kind of funny. So I knew Carmen. She was a great baboon trainer. I loved her. She was on the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus. But she was also on this other show that Clark, my ex-husband, had joined. And I'm a weird person about affairs. I don't really get upset with affairs. They, to me, are symptoms that something is wrong. So, yes, that really endorsed something was wrong. I honestly don't remember if I asked, "Would you like to work on it or not?" Because I can go back to that moment. It was so impactful in my life. I can go back to that moment and relive where we were sitting, our body language. Neither of us got upset or mad. We were very soft-spoken. But I don't remember if I asked if he wanted to work on anything. I think I just let him talk and accepted what he was saying. The feelings that night when I went to sleep of total rejection and the dream that I had about going down a hallway and there were a series of doors and I wanted to get out of the hallway. I knocked on every door to see if that was the door that would let me out. And every single door said, "Get out, get out, get out, get out." Meaning, get out of here, get out of my life, I thought. But I was sharing this with a friend of mine who's a psychotherapist, and she said, "No, it was the right thing to do for you to get out of the marriage." Now, I just had this conversation recently. It wasn't back in, 1989. This is when the conversation happened, 1989. We're now in 2019, and I want to tell you, any heavy emotional experience in our lives stays with us. I'm not angry about it. I'm not even remorseful about it. It was a learning experience, and so it was important. So complete rejection in that dream. And so my friend said, no, this was the right thing, Judy. You needed to get out of the relationship. It wasn't the right relationship for you. And even after the divorce was filed for, and I remember saying to him, go ahead and file for it. I will sign anything. I will do what I'm supposed to do. And you may certainly have your freedom. If this is what you want, you absolutely should have the way you want to live your life. You should be given that back. And I do feel that way. You can argue that with me, that you should have tried, you should have talked more, but it seemed pretty definite that this is what he wanted. And he thanked me for not arguing him out of it. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I really don't know. I think maybe fortunately, I look at everything as a positive. He filed for divorce, but he was traveling again on that show and he couldn't complete the filing. So he, and it was going to be in Connecticut where we got married. After the second tour of this other show, he came out to Los Angeles to see me. He just wanted to say goodbye. He was in a different space and he had some things he wanted to give me, and I was doing very well. It was the saddest year of my life. Yes, let me go back to, I went back to Los Angeles. I left Chicago. I spent the weekend with him. Okay, we're going to get divorced. Fine. Came back to Los Angeles. That started the saddest year of my life. I went to work every day. I was highly successful. It's so strange to me how I could have worked in a new environment. I was working on straight commission. I earned a living. It was amazing that I could do that, that I could get up every day and put myself together so that I could learn this new job with my brother and be successful at it and bring in money. And then every single night when I went home, I just walked. I was like Forrest Gump. Remember when Forrest Gump just walked? He was so upset that he just walked and walked and walked, and he walked across country. I was like Forrest Gump of the divorce genre. I just walked. I had to get out the energy somehow. I didn't develop bad habits. I just walked. And that took a year. And that showed me how I processed really big feelings. And that's how I processed. I walked. So that was done. I thought the divorce was going on. I really didn't receive anything to sign. And then Clark wanted to come out to see me. He couldn't finish the filing. So he wanted to bring me some things and see what he could do about filing again. Wanted to explain that to me. And then he fell in love with me again, because after a year of just walking like Forrest Gump, all of a sudden I snapped out of it. And I developed the LA Judy personality that I have now. I had friends, I went out, I had a blast. I really had a blast. I was a metamorphosized human being. I used divorce to improve myself after I got myself through all the emotions. Unfortunately, Clark fell in love with me again and wanted to work on things. I was petrified. I did not want to. My stomach, my gut said, no, you cannot do this. This is not the right thing for you. But I did what I think most people do. You give it one more college try. And just in case you're wrong and maybe you should work on it again, it just didn't work out. We went to therapy. I didn't mind using the therapist he chose. It just didn't work out. And he needed to be with somebody who was so much more like him. I wasn't. We were completely different people. He did not fit into the life I had carved for myself here, yet he stayed here. My brother liked him. It was the first time he had met him. My brother did not attend our wedding and asked him to be the secretary in the company that we worked in. I couldn't believe this was happening. This was so weird. But the good thing about it was he taught us how to use the computer. He's so smart. He's Mensa. That he read how to, this was 1991. people were just putting computers in their offices. And he literally read a book, figured out how to work a computer, and forced us to get off the typewriter. So that was really good. And he was a great secretary. But it was really hard working with him, and some of you have to do this, while trying to put the relationship back together. And then when it didn't work, I said, look, can you just get a job somewhere else? Because this is hard. And men, this is my brother's reaction. What does it matter, Judy? You're just working together. Okay, this is a topic for another podcast. But I did ask him to please get another job. This was becoming too hard. Now, I'm in the divorce business, right? And I file for divorce as well as mediate. Clark did start the divorce process in Los Angeles since he was living here. I don't remember one single thing about the filing. Not one single thing. And I file for divorces for a living. This is how when you're in pain and you just block out everything. This is how women have children. You must block out the pain of childbirth. You have to, or you'd never have children again. I don't remember one single thing. Here's what I remember. We went to the courthouse to finish the filing together, and we were holding hands. We were actually in a very good place. We had resolved everything. I had wished him well. He fell in love with somebody else, the choir girl at the church that he attended. He wanted me to be a choir girl, just not who I am. I'm a rock and roller. I will always be a rock and roller. If you want me to sing in a rock and roll band, even though I can't sing, sure, I'll do backup vocals for you. But no, I'm not a choir girl. So we just didn't work out. But we did become very amicable, and we finished the divorce very well. And all of you are going to finish your divorces very well. But here's what I wasn't ready for. This is the emotion. Once the divorce was final, I did not expect to be hit with another wave of emotion. And I was. I became so sad once the divorce was final that I sat in my apartment after I worked every day in complete silence for about 3 months. This was my way of processing. And after about 3 months, done, cloud lifted. I started living my life in a very happy way. So that was me. That was my divorce story. Total acceptance, but gosh, the emotions were unbelievable. Now I want to go to complete denial, because many people are in complete denial. They know that there's problems in the relationship, but they do go to therapy, or they don't go to therapy, one of the two. And they just continue on in the relationship until one person says, I need a divorce. I can't imagine what it's like to be the person initiating that conversation. It's got to be so hard. I mean, listening to those words, I would like a divorce, is hard. But speaking the words has got to be equally hard. And so you'll go into these. You'll continue with your relationship, and then one person just has to say, I need a divorce. And even though you know the relationship had issues, even though you know that you went to therapy for the relationship, you still go into complete denial. But I really want to stay married. I don't want to get a divorce. We can still work on this. Even though all the warning signs are there, you don't like doing the same things, you don't have sex anymore, you barely talk over the dinner table, you have nothing in common, even though all of that is there, one person moves out and comes back, moves out and comes back, you're still in complete denial and you don't understand why the divorce is happening. And that really is prevalent. Recently, I got called by somebody. It was the respondent. It was the wife respondent, and she was served with a response. And she called me sobbing, absolutely despondent, not able to compose herself. I had to wait in the phone conversation until she could. And she said to me, this is a complete shock. I didn't see it coming. I can't believe this is happening. We have 8 million children together. I'm adopting more. I mean, this was to her a complete shock. And it was hard for me to believe it was a complete shock, but I have had examples where somebody knew. I had another couple that she knew they were having problems, but all of a sudden they were doing very well, watching movies together, eating popcorn, talking, and all of a sudden she gets served with a response. I'm served with a petition, pardon me. And this was like the woman who had called me. Both women completely shocked, didn't see it coming. But the most recent one that I started talking about, she was sobbing in the phone conversation. The more I talked to her, the more the real story came out. And she knew they were having problems. He had moved in and out at different times. He had had affairs. She knew about them. So to get that petition served, it shouldn't have been. I mean, yes, that in and of itself, that act in and of itself is a shocking act. And yes, you have to process it. But you also know that there were problems. So the more we talked, and this is why you have to have somebody in your life you can talk to, a therapist, somebody professional who can guide you through a conversation. As a mediator, I'm not a therapist. I really can't diagnose or analyze, but you know, I can hold a space for people to talk. And as a human being who has gone through divorce, I can talk about that and how the shock will be what it is, but you will get over that shock. And I think she had just been served the day before. So we're talking about a 24-hour time frame, not enough to get over the shock. And if you're a mom and if you're working, my gosh, the responsibilities don't end. So while you're trying to process this new reality that you've just been dealt, you still have to service other people, service your children, service your employer and the clients that come through. So I started talking her off the ledge, so to speak. And the more we talked, and I just simply asked her questions about, are you living in separate residences? And just little normal questions that I would ask to get a profile of the divorce with any potential client that called me. She then dealt with the reality. Yes, we were having problems, but they hadn't talked about getting divorced recently. So therefore the shock took over. And then you know what? I give this woman a lot of kudos because she then just kind of turned it around. She said, okay, this is my reality. Let me deal with it. And I think they started talking. So I did her paperwork for her for the response, and I'm working with just her right now. And when I talk to her, she's doing much better. I share this with you so that you know if you're the one that was served, you will do much better. Once you accept that reality and don't fight it, especially if it's been rocky, you need to get out of this relationship. So accept it. And once you accept it, everything's going to turn out well, because once you accept it, it's conversation. The whole process of divorce is a conversation about making decisions while you're filing. If you need to take your time, take your time. But it's a conversation. You get to make decisions. You get to make plans. You get to turn your life around. And everything really does work out. It really will work out in the end. Okay, and now here's number three. The worst case of all. Threats and anger. So this is really when you are dealing with a high conflict personality. Normal people get upset, but reasonable people, I shouldn't use the word normal. Because we all have a little bit of high conflict in us at times, I think. Or what I lovingly like to say, we have a little batshit in us. But if you're married to a high conflict personality, this becomes the worst case scenario. So in a conversation for divorce, where you say, I really would like a divorce, just something that simple, things aren't working out, we have tried, we have talked about this, but it just isn't working out. Here's what I want you to get ready for. If you leave this house, you're getting nothing. Or I'll take you for everything. Or you'll never get to see the kids. If you divorce me, so now this is being punishment. You are going to be given punishment for the fact that you want to leave this person. And this is what you have to realize. It's the only way a high conflict person can respond. And why is that? Because when people are high conflict personalities, control is the most important aspect of their life. There are a variety of high conflict personalities, and in January, I want you to look forward to these two interviews. I interview a gentleman named Bill Eddy, and the last name is spelled E-D-D-Y, Bill Eddy. Bill Eddy is one of the most amazing people in the world. Bill Eddy is internationally known, the guru of handling high conflict personalities in a divorce. And when you listen to these two podcasts, I'm going to upload them the second and third Wednesdays in January. The title will be Divorce with a High Conflict Personality. That's going to be the first one. And the second one will be Co-parenting with a High Conflict Personality. You're going to learn a lot. But for right now, since many of you during the holidays, we're going into the holiday season, we're in December, if this is when people start asking for divorces. They never want to do holiday dinners again. This is the last time they will suffer through a holiday with a spouse they don't want to be married to. I get a lot of calls in January. We have to go through divorce. So anyway, you're married to a high conflict personality, and the threats. Just leave them alone. Do not get scared. So I get a lot of calls from people who say, I'm really, really scared. I just said to my husband or wife that we need a divorce. Things aren't working out. And I was told he or she is going to take the kids from me. If I leave this house, I'll never get any part of it. We have a community property state in California. The house is community property normally. And he or she will take me for everything. I fall into the trap of saying he, by the way, because in my experience, a lot of men are high conflict personalities. But honestly, women are too. I just seem to get a lot of this from men, but it doesn't matter. I don't mean for it to be gender specific. So forgive me if I fall into the he pronoun. Leave the threats alone when they start coming back at you. Don't respond. None of this is going to happen. Normally, none of this is going to happen. The threats are the only way for that person to process the emotion and the fear that underlies the threats. People need to feel in control of their lives. We all do. And when we don't, we become angry and fearful. So all reasonable people become fearful. First of all, fear sets in. And then sometimes the only way we know how to deal with fear is through anger. It's the way we process fear that supports our responses. So please know that when you hear those threats, it's because of fear and all of a sudden the lack of control. But when you put the divorce into other people's hands, into the legal professional's hands, whether you go to an attorney, you definitely absolutely should go to an attorney first. That is the first person you should call to get your legal rights. I don't care what state you live in. Go to an attorney first. Don't sign a contract for a retainer. Just buy 1 hour or 2 hours of an attorney's time just to talk. It is so worth the money. just to talk. You need that talk. You need to know what the landscape of divorce is in your particular state. It really is different in different states. I can only work in California. That's where I'm licensed. So go to an attorney, get your legal rights, then you'll calm down yourself. You'll know these are threats that are there to cover up fear and anger. And then do what you need to do about filing. You can either go to a mediator like me, who also files as a legal document assistant. You can file with a judge. You can file with an attorney. Or, and I, you know, you may think this is self-serving of me, or you can try and file on your own. And certainly if you have absolutely no money, you have to file on your own. You go to the self-help centers at courthouses, but that is the hardest way to file. The system just isn't set up for these online services or to go to the courthouse and do it yourself. You will never, ever, ever be given all of the information you need to know how to file correctly. Little things that make a difference from one form to another will get you rejected. Not knowing the order of the forms and how much space and time has to go by, how many calendar days before you can file the next form. If you are married to a high conflict personality, you really can't do this on your own. You have to involve other industry professionals. And when you involve other industry professionals, things should calm down. But if they don't, the court is your best friend. You have to take it to court. You have to do hearings, maybe for custody and support, child support, spousal support. You may have to involve the court system if you can't afford an attorney, if you can't afford somebody like me as a legal document assistant or a mediator who will sit down and work out the settlement with you. Then you simply have to go to court. And don't look at it as punishment. Don't look at it as a threat. The court is there to help make those decisions for you. And so that's how you should use the court system. Productively, not destructively. And so that would be the harshest situation of all. So to recap, handling the divorce conversation. If you are the one being asked for the divorce, there are three categories you will fall in: total acceptance, complete denial, or threats and anger. If you are the one delivering the divorce conversation, just get ready for those three reactions. And you should do well with this information ahead of time, knowing the landscape of emotions that you're ready to walk into. So that's it for today. I hope this was beneficial to all of you. You have just been listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. You can reach me at my email address, Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com. Or if you're in Southern California and you would like to call me to file or mediate, my company is Divorce Resource Incorporated, Divorce Resource Inc., INC, and that's my web address. And you'll know how to reach me through my website. Thank you so very much, and I look forward to speaking with you next week.